You know, I'm sure you've had OBs on the program that will say, you know, there is no reason in the back half of a pregnancy that a woman needs to have an abortion to protect her health, because the protection is you deliver.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dear Jane. We have quite the conversation ahead of us today. Scott, would you be surprised to know that in many ways Colorado is worse than California and New York when it comes to abortion?
Worse than California and New York?
Mm-hmm.
As I think about that and I think about some of the other things Colorado has done and some of the other people Colorado has elected, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I knew it was pretty bad there.
Yeah. We're going to learn more about the crazy state of Colorado, but also some encouraging things coming out of Colorado, which is a little bit few and far between these days with today's guest. But before we get into this conversation, I'd like to remind everyone, if you enjoy the episodes that come out on Dear Jane right here every week on Thursdays, we'd encourage you to subscribe. This helps other people find the show and get to listen in on these important conversations. So here's what you can do. Wherever you're listening right now, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe or follow. And then also follow us on social media. We will post short clips of our episodes so you can share those little bite-sized pieces of the conversations we have to get people more interested in the things that we're talking about here on Dear Jane.
Yep. Easy, free way to help spread the pro-life message.
Yeah. Our guest today is Rich Bennett. He has been the president and CEO of Life Network in Colorado Springs for 8 years. He also serves as the board chairman for the Colorado Pregnancy Care Alliance, working with pregnancy centers all over the state to kind of combat some of the craziness and combine forces. I think you're really going to enjoy today's episode and the conversation we have, talking about what's going on in Colorado, the implications for the rest of the country, but also some really encouraging things coming out of the state and pregnancy care ministries. So don't go away. Listen to this conversation. Rich, thanks so much for joining us today on Dear Jane.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you both.
You and I both live in Colorado, and I think this surprises most people when they hear this, but one could make, I think, a compelling case that Colorado is actually worse than California and even New York when it comes to anti-life laws. Walk us through the last few years of recent legislation and what's been happening in Colorado.
You know, rolling back, thanks for that question, Marcy. You know, my family came to Colorado almost exactly 20 years ago. And in just two decades, our state really has politically shifted, socially shifted, and shifted on the life issue dramatically. And none of it is good if you're a pro-life Christian. And so, you know, I like to joke, and I don't think it's a joke, quite frankly. We've out-California'd California when it comes to the life arena. And in fact, as you know, we're actually infamous in that we're the only state in the country that has chosen to ban abortion pill reversal. And, you know, I think that's just one example of many where we are leading the way for abortion, or at least trying to, in our country.
Yeah, I remember being shocked when I moved here 12 years ago to discover that Colorado had no limits on abortion whatsoever. We had two little holdouts for a while where there was a parental notification law. It wasn't even consent. Parents had to be notified. And then also taxpayer money couldn't go to fund abortions. Both of those things have changed in the last couple of years. And Amendment 79 gained some media coverage outside of the state. Can you talk us through that and what that means for Colorado taxpayers now?
Yeah, we have completely undone what was put in place back in 1984, and for 40 years has meant that our taxes in Colorado would not go directly toward abortion. And with Amendment 79 passing in November, one of the implications was removing the provision in the state constitution that blocked that. And so, you know, I've had a number of donors in Colorado feel like, gosh, I want to start to withhold some portion of my taxes because I don't want my state taxes to go toward abortion. And not that this should make them feel better, but, when I remind them that for my entire lifetime, federal taxes have gone toward Planned Parenthood. In fact, Marcy, I know I'm a little bit older than you, but since 1970, that has been the case. And so truly, for my entire life, I've known nothing else than our federal taxes are going toward Planned Parenthood. And now in Colorado, our state taxes for the time being are as well.
So for those of us who don't live in the People's Republic of Colorado, it might be instructive just so we don't, we don't end up at the same place. How did it get there?
That's a great question. I mean, it certainly starts, Scott, with the reality that elections have consequences. And I think that those who are pro-abortion have done a masterful job of manipulating the Wild West mentality in Colorado, which really is sort of this, I believe this, but I'm not going to force my beliefs on others. And, Marcy, I'm sure you've run into this too. There are people who generally personally would hold to conservative values that would say, but I'm not going to tell somebody what they should do when it comes to abortion. And so I think, helping people understand the implications of that position, and it really starts with the value of every human life, and that, of course, begins at conception.
So giving the landscape that we have described here, Rich, I know you're plugged in with pregnancy centers across the country. How does that make life different for a PHC in Colorado? What's life like for you all and your business, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I mean, this past year, Scott, 63% of the women coming in our doors, abortion is on the table. And so certainly in a state like ours, that, and it still feels a little bit like a creepy gut check to say this out loud, but, an abortion tourism state, meaning people in surrounding states are traveling to Colorado because we have become known as a place for abortion. And so our appointments have gotten harder just in the 8 years that I've been here, where so many patients are coming in and they are, really set initially on, I'm just going to order the pill online. And it's only after understanding the implications of that and doing that without medical care that a young woman will come in and see us before she orders the pill online. But, it really is, I would say, every day we know there are going to be hard appointments across our four locations.
Going back to something you said earlier about elections have consequences, I have definitely encountered that mindset you described. In some ways, I have felt like Colorado, more than it used to be a conservative state, maybe was libertarian. So again, this mentality of, I don't want to mess with your rights, I don't want you to mess with my rights, and then it shifted left from there. But like you said, elections have consequences, and one of those is that we're not able to pass common sense pro-life legislation, or not, you wouldn't even have to label it pro-life. One piece of legislation that I know different coalitions have tried to pass over the years is just regular health and safety checks at abortion clinics. So we think, shocker, that abortion clinics should be held to the same standards as any other medical clinic. That has failed when it's been introduced. And unfortunately, that does have real world consequences for women in Colorado. Fort Collins was in the news in recent weeks and months for some really devastating news. Can you walk us through what happened at the abortion clinic there?
Yeah, and this is a super hard story, and so we need to start with that. Just 3 months ago, Marcy, in February, an 18-year-old who, a young woman named Lexi, and she's just starting out on her own. She's just moved into her first place on her own. She finds out that she's pregnant. And, like a lot of women that we see, they're just overwhelmed in that situation. It carries on into an early second trimester pregnancy, and she finally decides she's going to move ahead with an abortion at a Planned Parenthood in Fort Collins. And in doing that, has a catastrophic complication called an amniotic fluid embolism, and that's a life-threatening emergency. and that can arise in the back half of a pregnancy. And, you know, the tragedy is in that moment, what was prioritized for her care was to do this silent siren treatment of bringing in an ambulance. And ultimately, she loses her life and baby loses her life. And, you know, I just think, gosh, let that sink in. We prioritized, Planned Parenthood prioritized appearances over the care of this young woman. And I think it's a sad, tragic example of so many times we are prioritizing politics and appearances as a culture over care for women. And this is a super tragic example of that.
Given the landscape, how does it lead to, or does it, I'm assuming it does, but how does it lead to apathy among pro-life supporters in your state? And my context for that question is I was having a conversation with someone. We were talking about Colorado specifically, and they said, you know, you wouldn't know it, but some of the best pro-life donors live in Colorado. But there's just, to be honest, there's been this sense of, why fight it anymore? Do you run into any of that there?
You know, maybe a little bit. I think among those who are informed, people who listen to programs like this certainly help. I don't see it so much with them. You know, I think a positive thing that it's driven is people wanting to do something about it. And certainly, as we talked about, elections are a part of that. But coming alongside pregnancy centers, how can we get involved in changing laws? How can we provide meaningful ongoing care to men and women? I think you are seeing a deeper commitment from men and women in Colorado who are all in their Christian faith and saying, okay, what are we going to do about it, as opposed to just wringing their hands. And, you know, for me, there's nothing sadder than people who are saying, well, I guess I'm just going to move away, and kind of move away in a huff. And, you know, my guidance to that is always, hey, if God is calling you to Tennessee or Alabama, then you absolutely need to go. But if you're going just out of, you know, I'm done with this Colorado crazy republic that you talked about, Scott, then I think that's the wrong reason.
I found a lot of people kind of think of themselves as missionaries out here, which I
absolutely
think is
without a doubt.
Good way to think about it.
It's a mission field in Colorado. You know, every once in a while, we get surprised as Americans to learn that there are people from Africa that are coming to the United States as missionaries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a mission field right here in the state of Colorado. And so I love hearing that people are moving here because they feel called to do something about lives like Lexi's being lost in Colorado, and the lives of so many untold babies whose lives were taken through abortion. And so, you know, Marcy, wrapping back to, you know, that legislation, it didn't even make it out of committee here in Colorado, that we want to put common sense medical regulations on abortion clinics in Colorado. Mm-hmm. That's not a medical decision. That's a political decision.
Mm-hmm. A few years ago, right before the Dobbs decision came out, the Colorado State Legislature said, we're going to, up until that point, abortion was legal through all 9 months of pregnancy because no restrictions had been passed. But they decided to enshrine the right to abortion in state statutes. So they passed the infamously named Reproductive Health Equity Act in 22. And I think the pro-life community here kind of thought, okay, well, now it's enshrined in state law. Surely there's nothing else on their agenda or that they can do to make life difficult for pro-life advocates. And you and I both know that was not the case. There was a trio of bills that came out in 23. There was more legislation last year and this year. Let's talk about, if you remember, Senate Bill 23-190, that had particular impact on pregnancy centers in the state because it did two things. It banned abortion pill reversal, and it placed restrictions on how pregnancy centers specifically can market their services. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I can, as you're saying that, Marcy, I can remember being in my office and learning that this bill was surfacing and just, you know, having, well, you know, 15 minutes of outrage and anger and disbelief. And I think the abortion pill reversal piece, I mean, even to this day, again, we were talking about it earlier, it has nothing to do with what is good, effective, proven medicine, because if it did, it would never have happened. And, you know, the piece on pregnancy centers now in Colorado can face fines of up to $25,000 per incident for any ads the attorney general deems deceptive. And what was fascinating about this is there was no smoking gun. At no point was any ad held up and shown to be deceptive. This was all about intimidating pregnancy centers like ours from advertising. And this whole piece of legislation was written by pro-abortion groups and basically gift package to two of our state senators to then push through, and they did. And, you know, I am already fielding calls from people in other states where APR bans are being talked about. And thankfully, mercifully, Colorado remains the only state where that's really been acted on in a meaningful way. And I think everybody's kind of waiting to see if that law, which is currently being caught up in state courts, gets undone. And certainly my prayerful hope is that it is.
You mentioned the penalty for deceptive advertising. I think some people might be surprised to hear the answer to this question. As a pregnancy center, and what else as a pregnancy center in Colorado are you either not able to do or are you required to do because of state law that might surprise some folks?
You know, we don't have any, you know, there are some states that have, you know, you need 18-point type when you say such and such. You know, I think the one of the focuses was disclosing that you don't do abortions, and the law doesn't hit that square on, but the reality is our centers and so many other centers do just that. And, you know, Abby Johnson is a hero in this movement in so many ways, and she's spoken at our gala. I would argue she did not help the pregnancy center movement when years ago she said your best patient is one that is coming into your pregnancy center thinking she's having an abortion. That's not how we operate at our Colorado Springs pregnancy centers. And that quote, taken out of context, was cited again and again in the House floor in Colorado. And the reality is it reinforces this notion that, you know, we're somehow going to trick women into choosing life. And, you know, that's so demeaning to women. Obviously, women have their own choices. And more than that, we operate with integrity, and we don't do that. And so every page on our website is going to disclose that we don't provide or refer for abortion. And part of that is we also don't benefit from providing abortions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's good to hear because, you know, we in other states, we've heard things like in Minnesota where they talk about a requirement to have any kind of medical personnel inside a PHC follow an approved script. And if they don't, they could get in trouble, things like that. So I was just curious to see what about when it comes, so you can't talk about APR at all or can't?
Yeah, basically you can't provide or prescribe abortion pill reversal. And so what we've done is Heartbeats International still has their abortion pill reversal network. And we actually have pages still to this day on our website that refer people to that. And from there, you know, the primary outlets for help would be the two medical professionals that are enjoying protection because they're part of the lawsuit here in Colorado. And of course, that would be Bella Health and then a nurse practitioner's practice in Castle Rock. And so we really turn that over to the APR hotline, and then they get women connected with help. And thankfully, that is still happening here in our state. And again, we'll see what happens with that case, which Marcy, I believe, is going to get decided later this year, at least for now.
Yeah, we should certainly be praying about that. That would be huge if that would be overturned. I think we've painted a depressing enough picture of the current state of affairs in Colorado, but I promise there has been good news lately, and out of all places, Boulder. Talk us through that.
Yes, well, you know, it's become infamous, right? The clinic in Boulder as a late-term abortion clinic, and this doctor, Dr. Hearn, for more than 50 years. And, you know, I just can't believe having a legacy of death where you, for 50 years, are providing abortions in a second and third trimester scenario. And Dr. Hearn himself said 70% of those were performed on healthy women with healthy babies. And so,
just within the last month,
this clinic that was believed to be handed off to a younger physician, and mercifully, that didn't happen, and it just unexpectedly closed. And so on the very same week that Colorado taxpayers were going to be are now required to fund abortion, we got this terrific news, this news that we've been prayerfully praying into, in some cases, for five decades, that the infamous clinic run by Dr. Hearn in Boulder is now closed. And so that is huge news. And of course, he's been profiled in The Atlantic. He's been profiled other places nationally. And this is a big win in Colorado for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the opening of another later term clinic in Pueblo in recent years, I was encouraged to know, because when he announced his retirement earlier this year, like you said, I think everybody kind of just assumed, okay, someone else is going to be taking over the practice. So that's encouraging to me that it seems no one else wanted to resume his practice of late-term abortions.
You know, Marcia, you saw this too. It was interesting when Amendment 79 was being passed, those in the pro-abortion movement were distancing themselves from Dr. Hearn, mm-hmm. and even saying things like, well, you know, we're not going to stand behind the comments of a physician who should have retired a long time ago, I think was one of the comments. And I think it was the fact that they didn't like the truth that he was revealing of 70% of his late-term abortions were on healthy women mm-hmm. having healthy babies. That runs against the narrative that, number one, late-term abortions, they don't really happen. And then, number two, they're in these dire, critical cases where you're protecting the women's health. And, you know, I'm sure you've had OBs on the program. In fact, I know you have, that will say, you know, there is no reason in the back half of a pregnancy that a woman needs to have an abortion to protect her health, because the protection is you deliver.
Mm-hmm. Rich, something near and dear to my heart that I like to talk to guys about is the role of men in this whole debate. And really, we can sort of break it into two things. You know, just the conversation in general. You know, some people might watch this podcast, okay, here's two old white guys. You know, who cares what they think? But then also, you know, the impact that a man plays when she is choosing whether to have an abortion or not. What do you think about that? What is our role in this whole thing?
Well, Scott, I'll ask you a question back, because I'm curious to see if what your answer will be. We serve a lot of men in our pregnancy centers, and there is a response that we hear more than any other by those men when they come in and they're coming in with a woman who's facing an unexpected pregnancy. What do you think that response is?
It's her decision.
There it is. You got it. Yeah. And more specifically, I will support her in whatever she chooses. Mm-hmm. So you hear in that language what he has been beautifully educated into by our culture, which is, it's not my decision, it's her decision, and it's all on her. And while that's the decision, while that's the language he's been educated into, it's not the language she wants to hear. What women want to hear who are facing that circumstance is the man saying, I'm here, I'm present, I want to support this child, I want to work on this relationship if that's appropriate, and I'm here for you. And mercifully, last year, just over half of the time that she had an appointment at our four Colorado Springs pregnancy centers, he did too. And that has grown significantly in just the last 5 years, where whenever possible, whenever appropriate, we want to make sure that she knows we want the father of the baby there too. Because we know biblically the healthiest outcome for that baby is an engaged mom and an engaged dad. And even if they've gotten things biblically out of order, we're here now, and we want to have her engaged, and we want to have him engaged.
So to get him there, has that required some intentional extra communication?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I would even say, you know, it's been a journey as a staff to get there. You know, so many people come into this movement having had personal experience with abortion, and that could take a lot of different forms. And so we've even had staff members, I think, that we've had to debunk this idea that the father of the baby is a bad guy, that the father of the baby is automatically going to be a voice for abortion. In fact, I've even heard national leaders say, we don't want him in the center until after she's made her decision. And I just, my heart breaks when I hear that. And I do think that comes from a personal experience. And I totally get that. You know, if you've personally been hurt by a man, or you've seen enough women who have been personally hurt by a man, that's going to color your response. But educating our staff into, and then building momentum into, the power of having that father in the building has been huge. And just to put numbers to that, you know, this past year, 85% of the time, a mom met her baby via ultrasound in one of our centers. She chose to parent. That's not unlike a lot of centers across the country. But here's what's unlike a lot of centers across the country. He's in the room almost half of the time now. And if he's in the room 97% of the time, they're going to choose to parent. That is the power of an engaged father.
Wow.
Love it. Yeah, I love that.
That's truly remarkable, because if you think about the impact, you know, the movement often talks about the impact of an ultrasound on a woman's decision to carry her baby. But what I'm hearing you say is the impact of her boyfriend or partner, whoever, coming alongside and saying, yes, we're going to do this together, is more significant.
And, you know, when it was sadly, Marcy, the other side's figured this out. There's a reason why Planned Parenthood's turn up the heat in the summertime on men that are in the waiting room, or outright discourage and tell fathers of the baby to go sit in the car. Because they realize that if he's physically here, the likelihood that she might make a different decision goes up. And that's exactly what we see in our centers.
What about the debate itself? We don't have a uterus, so we shouldn't have a voice in this whole conversation.
Well, you know, obviously there's a man and a woman involved in every pregnancy. And I just think it's a lie of the enemy that we men, Scott, have been educated into. And quite literally, you know, I graduated from the University of Kansas 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, as a Christian young man, I'm sad to say I probably would have given a response much along those lines, because I had been educated into it's her decision and I should stay out of it. And the reality is there's a reason why children have mothers and fathers. And I come back to, the healthiest outcome for that child is an engaged mom and an engaged dad. And so, yes, ultimately it's her decision, but he needs to be there in that moment, and that can make a huge difference.
And Rich, you are certainly a testament to God's mighty power that you graduated from the University of Kansas and still made something of yourself. So that really by itself is a testament.
There it is. I know. I don't know what to say about that, but we're great at basketball. We're not terribly great at imparting wisdom in the
institution. See, I'm in Missouri, so I have to say. I know.
You and Nellie both.
Rich, you've been the director at Life Network, which includes the Colorado Springs Pregnancy Centers, for 8 years now. Is that right?
That's right.
I know our time intersected there for a little bit when I was able to work with you. In the last 8 years, you know, you've taken the ministry from having two pregnancy center locations to four now, which is very exciting. You've opened two thrift stores during that time. What encouragement would you have, let's say, for other pregnancy center directors? Maybe they're in blue states and they're, you know, they're feeling the heat turning up and they're feeling discouraged, what encouragement would you give them to keep going?
You know, one of the things that I like to say, Marcy, is if you're in a blue state, God is not terribly impressed with your pro-abortion legislature. And the legislature is going to do what they're going to do. But, you know, what we're called to do is every day coming alongside a young woman and a young man who are facing the biggest decision of their young life. And that's whether to move ahead with a pregnancy that they weren't expecting. And being in a mission field like Colorado, we're getting more opportunities like that than ever before. And you mentioned what's happened here in the last 8 years, going from 2 clinics to 4. More than that, you know, the first year I was here, we provided 445 life-revealing ultrasounds. This year, with that 4th clinic in place, we're on pace to provide more than 1,500 life-revealing ultrasounds. And every one of those, of course, is a window to the womb. Every one of those is an opportunity to say, we're going to be here for you. We're going to be here for you, Father, and to pour into both of those individuals. And we're seeing huge success with that here in Colorado. And you can, too, in your blue state. And God's got you there for a reason. And that's why I hate hearing this notion that, you know, I'm going to leave my state and go somewhere where it's easier. Only if God's called you to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen to that. If people want to follow along with your ministry there in Colorado Springs and what you're doing, the website is elifenetwork.com. You can also follow along on social media, Facebook, Instagram, X. Anything else you want to leave us with as we wrap this up?
You know, one of the things that is a distinctive here in Colorado, and Marcy, this goes to some of what we've been talking about in terms of people wanting to do something about it. We've got our annual charity walk coming up, our Walk for Life. And if you're a center listening and your walk is just getting started, you want to know how to grow your walk, by all means, reach out, because on Saturday, June 7th, we're anticipating more than 2,500 people, yes, in the pro-abortion state of Colorado, to come together for life in Colorado Springs. And if you're curious to take a peek at all that, you can go to walkforlife.com and see the details on that. But that's, to me, the best day out of the year. To see so many people come together in a state that's as hard as ours and say life matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always a beautiful event. If you're nearby and in Colorado and you've never been, I encourage you to check it out, walkforlife.com. It's always, almost always beautiful. In my last several years of participating, I think there was one bizarre Colorado cold rainy Walk for Life, but the turnout was still amazing. So.
Well, that's just it. That was one of my favorite years because it showed that pro-life Coloradans aren't fair weather about their life commitment. Because yeah, we still had a couple thousand people there in the driving rain.
Yep. Rich, thanks so much for what you do there in Colorado and Colorado Springs and for joining us here today.
Well, thank you both for giving voice to important things that are happening in the life arena. And as we've kind of closed on these high notes, there's lots of reasons to be encouraged for sure.
Yep. Thanks, Rich.